Welcome to the Hang Your Own Hang podcast, a monthly podcast about hammocks, hammock camping, and everything related. Our goal is to enlighten you if you're a ground dweller and to entertain you if you're already a tree dweller. I'm Jonathan Kupel, and this is my co-host, Mark Baldwin.
Hey, Jonathan, how you doing?
Not bad. Looking forward to an interesting set of interviews this month.
Yep, we've got some good ones coming.
So, Mark, we've been doing this for a few months.
Yep. What are we on, four or five so far?
Yeah, I think this is number five. And when I told my son, who also listens to podcasts and that type of thing, that I was starting up a podcast for myself, he told me I should do Syntax 77. And then I mentioned that to you, and what did you say?
I said I have seen most of his videos at that point and I enjoyed them.
Now, how is it that I'm the only one that I knew that had never heard of Syntax 77?
Until Christopher... Not doing enough tech stuff?
I guess I'm not a nerd enough. I guess that's what it is. Well, this week we actually have Syntax 77 with us.
Yep. How's it going?
Good, thanks.
Good.
Nice and yourself?
I'm hanging in there pretty good.
Great.
No pun intended.
Now, for our audience, the audio is going to be a little different this month. And the reason is that I actually get a chance to travel for business, and I actually have Syntax 77 in the same room with me, and Mark is on the phone for a change. So the audio is going to sound a little different, but it gave us an opportunity to have an interview in a different way, and I'm really excited about it. This is kind of cool.
Yep.
And I'm sure our listeners will let us know if the audio is terrible. So a quick bio. Do you go by Sean or Syntax 77 in this kind of thing? Which do you prefer in the interview?
No offense taken for either.
Okay.
And most people know me as Syntax 77. Unless you watch more of the videos, you probably figure out my name. Not a secret.
So, yeah. All right, we'll stick to that then. Quick background or a bio. Living in the East Coast, in your real life you're an accountant or something similar?
Yep. That's pretty much it.
I did a little bit of research. It looks like the first video you posted up in YouTube was almost eight or nine years ago in 2008.
Yeah, it was way back there.
Your Go Time camp hunting trip?
Yeah, it was practically like a home movie.
Mm-hmm.
It was actually an old school DV tape that I just transferred so that my friend's dad could see it, who owned that hunting cabin, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then from that you did a bunch of shooting videos.
Yeah, definitely went through a phase there. Yeah, for sure.
Okay. And then on to 2011. So 3 years later, and then through today, you started doing backpack videos.
Yeah.
In fact, it looks like your most popular video has about 263,000 videos, over 250,000 views, which is pretty impressive.
Yeah, I think that was actually the first kind of full-length video that was in New Hampshire. It was in 2011.
Mm-hmm.
So it's got the benefit of time on its side. But, it was a pretty popular video. Yeah. It was actually – I didn't expect that. And then I was like, oh, people are actually watching this.
Yeah.
And that's what probably kind of prompted me to start making making videos. More seriously. Yeah, like full trip videos. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, and then in June, just recently, this past June in 2015, you started doing the Sin Chats.
Yeah, that was over the summer because I had so much going on. Actually out there doing trips that I wanted to do something over the summer. So I just started putting out those videos each week, actually, just going over various topics and frequently asked questions, got a lot of that stuff taken care of. So, yeah.
Okay. So yeah. Partly it was kind of a way to continue producing material and...
Just to keep engagement going and then two birds with one stone. You know, I often get frequently asked... You know, what kind of camera do you use? Or, you know, what's your suggestions on backpacks? So I was like, well, here's an opportunity where I can just kind of do videos where it's just me sitting and talking and then get some good comments going that I can learn from in the comment section as well.
Yeah, it's always fun to see when you start getting engaged by the people you're communicating with, especially if you're doing something outward like doing video.
Yeah.
It's interesting, that conversation. You're very responsive in that.
Yeah, I do enjoy that part of it a lot.
Did the number of responses you got from the camping videos and then the big jump with shooting videos really get you to change in how you made your videos?
I don't think it was so much a reaction. Well, I guess it kind of was. I think for the most part, it was kind of at the time when I first started the YouTube channel, especially that 08 video you're talking about, the hunting cabin. Mm-hmm. I just had an account that I opened up in like 07. It was just a regular kind of, I have a YouTube account just to watch videos. And then just kind of like most normal people, was just throwing videos up that I thought only my friends would watch.
Yeah.
And took it from there. And then at the time, you know, I always say it's best to go with whatever you're passionate with and the rest will fall into place. So we were doing shooting videos and stuff like that just because that's what we were doing. Mm-hmm. Honestly, never even thought anybody would watch them, and nobody really was. And then, like I said earlier, when I did that New Hampshire video, which was the first backpacking trip I actually ever went on, I just happened to film it, put that out, didn't really pay attention to it. And then like a couple months later, I was like, oh, like people are actually watching this and responding. And so I started filming more videos. And at this point, it's just, I barely have time to put out the hiking and, yeah, and backpacking videos. So it's just going with whatever I have time to do. So some people still ask if I would do the firearms videos, but I can barely get out the backpacking stuff.
So in the beginning with the videos, what kind of feedback did you get from viewers? A lot of positive, a lot of negative, a lot of in between?
No, I think it was mostly positive. So they didn't scare me away right away. There's always it's the internet, so there's always an interesting amount of negative feedback out there too. Huh?
Always going to be the trolls.
Oh, yes, of course. But no, for the most part, it was very positive, which is what kind of encouraged me to do it more. And that's one of the things that I've always enjoyed the most. I learn way more from my viewers than I think they'll ever learn from me. There's a lot of good info out there.
Mm-hmm. So you were already recording, and so that's why you kind of brought the video camera with you when you did your first hiking video, or kind of what inspired that? And that's extra weight.
I know.
It's a little bit of extra time and inconvenience.
Yeah, it's funny. I actually try to think back more often than you might think. I'll sit and go, how did I get here to filming every trip I do? And I don't know. I do kind of know. My friend Mike, who anybody who watches the videos may be familiar with from the videos that he's in, it was back in 2011, and he and my wife and him were trying to plan like a couple's vacation.
Okay.
And he came up with this idea because he had been in Boy Scouts and had done the White Mountains years ago and said, let's go backpacking. And I was like, I had never done that. Honestly, had no interest in it.
Oh, really?
But I was like, if that's what we're doing, okay, fine. I don't own any gear. I was a little overwhelmed by that for sure. But he got me kind of sold on that. And then since we were already kind of just filming and playing around with those the firearms videos, I actually filmed our first car camping trip that was kind of training for going up to the
like
Weiss.
Like a shakedown or whatever?
Yeah, it was like on a flip cam. It was real shaky. It was practically a Blair Witch shakiness quality going on there. It was great. So I just filmed with that for fun, and I put it up, and I don't think anybody watched that, but it was just for us. It was just for the four of us to watch. And then since I had done that, I had enjoyed the video editing so much, even though nobody's watching, I just enjoyed it, that I said, hey, well, I'll film this trip because then we'll have the memories. The four of us will have the memories. So that's how that started. It was worth the extra weight of the camera just for us to have some extra memories.
Yeah. What started this is a little off topic, but
sure.
When you do the video, you've got that thing where you reverb and do a couple echoes.
Oh, yeah.
What started that? Is that just like your thing now?
Or? I guess. I have no idea. Just boredom sitting in front of a computer, mm-hmm. editing by yourself for hours at a time. You can usually tell in the videos when I've been editing for a long stretch and I'm starting to go loopy.
Yeah.
Because it's probably when I start playing with audio or something.
Okay.
it's mostly for my own entertainment, but it is funny to see people's comments on that. Yeah.
Yeah, it seems to be a pervasive pattern.
Yeah.
Do you spend time kind of composing ahead of time what the video should look like or what kind of output you expect to get out of that?
Like when I'm out in the field? Or before the trip?
Well, like when we do these podcasts, we kind of put together a little outline just that we have a sense of what we want to get out of the conversation.
Yeah.
Right? So is there some kind of – like when you go into a hike, do you think, well, I want to kind of get this point of view or – I've got these things that I want to record that I want to communicate, or is it just making memories, like you're saying?
At first it was, but now, no, I definitely go into it usually, even in the trip planning phase at this point, because I'm starting to run out of kind of new angles. Mm-hmm. So even in the trip planning phase, I'm like, all right, what can we do for this trip? What can be the kind of the edge for this or the theme? And then even once I have where we're going, I'll always keep in mind almost like a story arc. I mean, everything is real and it happens, but you can kind of choose what to focus on. And a great example is my most recent one, Zeke's first backpacking trip, and our friend Zeke.
Oh, yes, I watched that.
When we did that, it was his first trip, and obviously, well, maybe not obviously, but it started to dawn on me that, hey, I should go with that angle. Because as a matter of fact, I'd already done the Pemmy Loop. So people already saw me walk around talking to myself in the woods on the Pemmy Loop. Mm-hmm. So to switch it up, kind of said in advance, hey, let's change the perspective here and just be aware of filming when Zeke's going through stuff. And so, yeah, there's definitely an effort to kind of have a different kind of a themed approach to the videos at this point.
And then when you're doing the editing, do you still approach it that way too? You've got the story and you – do you edit out a lot?
Yeah, there's definitely a lot that gets left behind. I think like just to keep that video as an example, there might have been 3 hours of raw footage and it pared down to an hour or two.
Okay.
So – but for the most part, when I'm filming, I'm kind of cognizant that it's something I want to use.
Got a favorite video?
That's a tough one. I've definitely been asked that several times.
Well,
I think it changes every time I think about it.
What do you tell your little cousins to go see? Or do you not tell your cousins that you have YouTube videos out there?
No, I don't care. Yeah, as far as suggesting hikes, I'll usually probe and see what their interests are or how bad they're trying to beat themselves up versus relax and stuff. For my favorite videos, I swear it changes all the time, depending on what kind of reflections I'm doing, and I'll even go back with friends and rewatch them sometimes to relive things.
Yeah,
I like one that it's an older video. It's actually one of the earlier ones that people don't often think of, and the quality's not great because it was on that flip cam. But Mike and I did the abandoned turnpike, which really isn't traditional hiking at all. But there's a stretch of abandoned turnpike in Pennsylvania that we just road hiked and camped on top of one of the abandoned turnpike tunnels, which was pretty crazy. So I often think of that one as a favorite. And then a lot of my solo hikes when I'm out there by myself, really with some time to think, I typically enjoy, like Cranberry Wilderness in West Virginia was a good one. Yeah.
Yeah. When I look at your videos and compare them to a lot of other videos of that hikers or hammock hangers or whatever do, yours tend to focus a lot more on the friends that you're with.
Mm.
And the fun that you guys are having as friends rather than, although you bring up some of the technical stuff,
right,
it doesn't seem to be as much of the focus. Is that a big part of the story that you're trying to communicate?
Yeah, because, I mean, and I do love to spend chunks of video geeking out on gear and stuff.
Yeah.
But I do try to show more of the friendship element. And it keeps it feeling more like a story, at least I hope it does,
mm-hmm.
instead of just a series of pictures of really cool vistas and then listing my gear. If I get more interaction with my friends, and it helps to have friends that are crazy because they'll make the video easy for you. Mike and TJ always seem to do something interesting. I swear I don't pay Mike to get injured that much. He really does. And he does it almost every time or has some sort of accident. And that stuff is just great to capture, you know?
That's really funny.
Yeah.
Yeah. I also like you talked about how that you include that idea of that introducing somebody to hiking or whatever. And I like how you stop and you show the map and you kind of walk through what you're thinking.
Yeah.
The internal monologue sometimes you miss with some of the videos or some of the people recording. Like I know the fact that you capture my 10-year-old son, who is naturally ADD because he's 10.
Sure, yeah.
I mean, that kind of speaks to how that conversation is going, even though it's one-sided.
Yeah, It definitely makes me slightly even feel like a crazy person sometimes, but I often, even on a solo hike, people will notice that I say we a lot, and it's not because I, at least that I know of, have multiple personalities, but I try to act like the camera really is whoever's going to be watching with me.
Okay.
So I try to aim for almost like you're on a virtual hike with somebody. So that we're along and I'm talking to you about what we're doing and try to keep it flowing like that. Like I said before, just to keep it from feeling like just a calendar of pretty pictures, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, seeing in your last videos and all, you have moved from tent camping into hammock camping, which we've been doing that. And actually, Jonathan and I were just doing that this weekend.
Awesome.
What made you change from the tent to a hammock?
That is a great question. And another one that I think about sometimes, because I think what it was, looking back, was I think I was, and it didn't end up helping me, and this is probably helping to others, but I think I had this grand idea that I was going to save a ton of weight.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
And I'm pretty sure that's what got me going on it. And then once I was looking for weight saving, ideas, and then I believe that brought me to the Hennessy hammock, and then just the whole hammock thing in general really piqued my interest. And then weight savings aside, I was just like, well, this is different and interesting. I always like to learn new stuff. That's kind of where it started. I think it started as trying to be a weight saving thing. It ended up, I think my Hennessy at one point system was over 4 pounds. So it was heavier than my tent, but it was so much more fun.
Yeah.
You know, and nowadays I'm down to probably 1.5 pounds for the whole system. But yeah, I think I was going for weight savings.
Was it a long process to make the actual change for you, or was it you just jump right into it?
And so I jumped pretty much right into it, but I think I did what a lot of people do, is I was really drawn to the Hennessy because it was just one kit.
Yeah.
And I was so scared or reluctant to research all these different components that I could screw up. So I just bought that, and they sent me everything I needed, and I went right out there and tried it. And it obviously – I went well enough that I got addicted to it. That's for sure, yeah.
Yeah.
Although you still tent camp every now and then. So what's up with that?
Yeah, I know. I do. And I'm not just saying it because of the company, but it is always a last resort, at least nowadays. It used to be I would do tent videos or tent trips that you'd see in the videos because all my friends hadn't converted yet.
Sure.
But at this point, I'm trying to think, who have I not converted? Just Zeke, but he's only been on one trip. So he'll be a convert soon. So it used to be just my friends were going out, and I'd be like, yeah, we'll just split a tent. Because really, if you do split a tent, you can be lighter than a lot of hammock systems. Nowadays, now that we all have hammocks for the most part, it's really only I've been getting more into going out west or southwest. So I did a trip to Utah recently. No real choice.
Yeah, you're not going to be hanging in Utah.
No. So my wife and I did that. And then I'm actually this week, in a couple of days or something, I'm going out to Arizona. And it's the same thing. I looked into it, but there's just no trees around. So now I kind of get it. I used to be like, why is everybody on hammock forums seem to be from the East Coast a lot more than, like, if I go to Backpacking Light, everybody's talking about tents. Well, they're all from out west, and I guess we're just kind of spoiled with trees here.
Yeah, that's a really interesting
point. Sort of tough putting a tree strap around a cactus.
Yeah, it could be a little painful, I'm thinking.
Yeah.
Yeah, the park rangers, they really frown on that, too.
Yeah, I think you have to use 4-inch straps if you're putting it on a cactus.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting that you mentioned that. You definitely seem to be more attracted to the East Coast. I remember seeing in one of your videos you mentioned how you sometimes choose your location kind of based on your mood or the kind of experience. Like,
yeah,
the Northeast is more technical camping, more technical hiking.
Yeah.
You go in, you go farther south. I know for our listeners, if you're not aware, Syntex 77 is here in, I guess, the middle of the East Coast. We're here around the Philadelphia, New Jersey, Delaware area, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
You've got some freedom in terms of choosing your locations, but you're staying on the East Coast. How does that work for you?
It works well. I often tell people, because, right around, I call it the greater Philadelphia area, because most people don't know what Delaware is. I've gotten that question a lot.
It's still bigger than Rhode Island.
It is a state, yes, I know. But, I say it's kind of a double-edged sword around here because, you can't drive just a couple hours and have an amazing mountain experience, but you're dead smack in the middle. You got the Smokies about 8 or 9 hours to the south, and you got the Whites and Maine and New Hampshire and all that about equidistant about 8-9 hours to the north. So if you're willing to drive 8 or 9 hours, you can do a huge variety of stuff. And for me, just cost-wise and doing things on a whim-wise, I'm pretty much limited to my car.
Yeah.
I've just started branching out into flying places. So East Coast is pretty much my only choice for driving unless I want to take off a tremendous amount of time, you know, from work, which usually I try to just do long weekends, usually 3 days or something like that. So
yeah, it sounds like the scouting experience.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. The one thing I can say personally is if you go far enough west, you get trees again.
Right. And I got to do that.
Yeah.
I definitely got to do that.
I've been lucky enough. I have a friend in the Portland area who does a lot of, he's actually a mountaineer as well as a backpacker.
Yeah.
So when I go with him, I'm stuck carrying both.
Really?
I have to carry a Kamek if we're going to, like we went and did Mount Hood. And so one of our sites was near the PCT. So it was like right near the, right off the trail, plenty of trees, no problem.
Yeah.
And then another camping site was going to be up above the ridgeline.
Okay.
So I ended up having to pack for both.
Yeah.
So I ended up going out and just sourcing up, you know, the little SOL bivvy.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Bivvy. Little escape bivvy or whatever.
Yeah, I just had that and I brought the lightest pad I could figure out how to bring and was miserable waking up still stiff, you know.
Yeah. Did you find it worth it to carry both because you could use your hammock when you had the opportunity? Or well, if you could do it again?
I think you're approaching the question wrong.
Am I? Yeah, I'm okay.
The misery of waking up sore was worth waking up, especially being from the East Coast, right?
Yeah.
So it was worth it to wake up at 3 or 4 in the morning above the treetops.
Oh, yeah,
right?
Sure.
Above the glaciers.
Sure.
And having the view of the stars and the city just kind of slowly waking up because you can see the city from up there. And
oh, very cool.
So it's not that it was worth it to bring my hammock. That was almost a non sequitur. It was more, you know, the amazing view of being up on top of a mountain was truly worth it.
Sure.
So definitely a different experience. I saw that, everybody saw you started bringing your wife camping and backpacking and hammock camping.
Yeah,
how did you get that to happen?
She always went, not always, but she started out on that first original trip and she did enjoy it. And then from there on, she wasn't quite as obsessed with it as I became. I actually became more obsessed with it than Mike, who's the person who drug me out there. He said it created a monster. It's kind of funny. So him and I were always willing to go when we would do trips with just us, and then I would do solo trips. And I guess within the last couple of years, she would go on trips if you know, my other friend's wife will go and stuff like that.
Okay.
Within the last year, and you know what? Probably not a coincidence to sell the hammocks here and how much I love them. I think since she started using the hammock, which was about the last year, she started coming to me with trip ideas.
It's wow.
Oh, yeah. And I would say this year, 3, if not more trips that I haven't released yet, I still have to edit them, were her doing. So she just has the bug now. I just had to get her out there a few times and make it, if I can give any tip, it's just to make it as smooth as possible. Mm-hmm. You don't need to do the same thing you do with your friends, like crushing miles or doing craziness. If you do that, that's, you know, or maybe you don't, but if you do, that's great. But maybe tone it back a little bit until you know that your wife is down with that. I took her out to some really pretty areas and she just got addicted too. So
when you and your wife were planning the first trip, did you spend a lot of extra time in the planning? Anecdotally, that seems to be kind of a lot of women are much less comfortable with camping, especially camping in the woods as opposed to, say, car camping.
Mm-hmm.
Did you do a lot of extra stuff to try to prepare for that or to make sure that she was comfortable? What went into your planning for that?
I think I'm usually overly nuts with the planning anyway.
Okay.
And she probably knew that.
Is that you being an accountant or is it just you being, you know?
Just me being overly nuts, I guess. Okay. So I think she already knew that. And I just kind of planned it just as thoroughly as I normally would.
Uh-huh.
Perhaps a little more so, actually, now that I mention it, because there are times where I'll go out with friends of mine, like Mike, and it'll be like, all right, like, here's the trailhead. Here's some options. Let's just figure out what happens.
Yeah.
She's not quite so keen on that. So I did make it clear to her, like, okay, this is what we're going to do. You know, we're going to do this night and this the next night. And that made her a bit more comfortable with it. Yeah.
Right. And then did you kind of wait until she was comfortable with the camping before you started with introduce the idea of the hammock?
Yes. Wasn't necessarily on purpose. I think it was just the way things played out. But yeah, she did many tent trips.
Okay.
Or I should say a decent amount of tent trips. And then got into the hammock once we decided, hey, we'll invest in another hammock for for you. Yeah.
Yeah. Being a couple, I always hear the big complaint is not having, you know, not being able to co-sleep with your spouse or with your significant other. But it seems like, not for another thing, but you want to sleep.
Well.
Right.
Yeah. No, she loves it. She was a little freaked out at first, and I'm sure this, I would assume this comes up often. But yeah, one of the first things she did say was, well, wait. Like, we're not in the same tent together anymore. Right. So, you know, what if something goes bump in the night? But we've learned to – it makes it a little tougher for site selection, but we just always have to find three trees in a triangle shape. Mm-hmm. And if it's sturdy enough, we both hitch up to the one tree. So we're very close to each other. Sometimes the tarps even overlap.
Yeah.
And she's gotten used to it now. But, yeah, that was a little bit of a concern of hers, but she seems to be over it now.
Yeah, with Christopher, when we started, my son, we did something similar, but you can do the straps on both sides of the trees.
Okay.
And then hang one person higher than the other.
Right, okay.
You can tuck right next to each other.
Yeah.
Actually, you could poke them
when
you start snoring. My son's snoring.
Oh, nice.
But yeah, you can kind of get pretty close and actually share that tarp as well. If
So within your videos, you're also doing some gear reviews as well. When you're out on the trail or when you're planning your trip, do you ever take that into account, what you're packing, or, you know, just try and get the gear reviews in at the same time or put it into some real world experiences?
Yeah, it's definitely consideration. I'm trying to think if I ever have. Usually not. I don't usually pack stuff just to have it out there for a gear review when I'm doing a trip.
Why is that?
Just because I like to naturally integrate it.
Okay.
So I will specifically bring stuff that I might not have otherwise because I do want to test it.
Mm-hmm.
But I won't film a separate video out there. I'll just let it be part of the video. I find that's a little more interesting for people or for me as well. I like doing the tabletop reviews if a piece of gear has really piqued my interest.
Uh-huh.
But for the most part, and I'm becoming more and more like this, I'd rather just have the gear show up in the videos and you can actually see me using it for real. And I just
instead of forcing the issue of it.
Yeah, and I enjoy the art form of editing the full length trip videos.
Yeah.
More than just pumping out like flashlight videos or something. If I have a flashlight I really love and I'm excited about it, I'll do a tabletop video because I want to share that with people. But I don't really like. I get a lot of offers like, try this gear, try that gear, in exchange for a video, and it's just I'd rather be sitting working on a story.
Yeah. Yeah, it's more authentic.
Yeah, and it's just, yeah, it seems more fun for me.
Yeah.
So, it doesn't even have to be something that you've actually done a actual review on. What's the best gear that you've found out there?
Oh, man, like a favorite and also like high quality type of piece of gear?
Yeah, yeah.
I'll tell you what, I love my dream hammock, and I have a lot of different hammocks that I do love, but I really do love... I love that. It's my first custom hammock or any piece of gear, really, that I sent away for, chose everything I wanted. Randy over there made it just how I wanted it. I really like that, and it's a high-quality piece of gear. It's probably my favorite one.
Right.
And then my trusty EMS backpack that I bought because I was too cheap to buy a Gregory.
Okay.
It's not a glorious bag at all, but it's been with me – it's now my winter bag. It's too big for summer, but I love that thing too. It's pretty indestructible.
Right. Okay, now on the opposite end of the spectrum, without giving any company names or any specifics, has anybody asked you to do a review of something that when you got it, it was just so horrible and it just wasn't thought out, or you just said to yourself, how am I going to do this? And you just said, you know what, I'm sorry, I can't do this.
I've never actually gotten my hand. I've never let it get so far that I get my hands on a piece of gear.
Okay.
Luckily, that I've been like, oh god, this is terrible. But I'm also pretty reluctant to take free gear from people. And there's plenty of gear that if I had taken it, I'd be answering this question a whole lot differently. I mean, I get offers for some weird stuff and stuff that doesn't even have anything to do with. Hey, try out this waterproof keyboard, like a computer keyboard.
Okay.
Do you watch the channel? Am I have you seen me take a PC out in the woods yet? So stuff like that. And then some of the more knockoff looking, I'm trying to think, just like chargers or weird water filter ideas. I just pretty much turned his request down. It doesn't really look like it's for me.
There's one piece of gear you got, and you had a really good review, the little lamp lantern charger.
I love that thing.
Mark couldn't hear, probably was sick of me talking about it this past weekend.
And it's hard to find.
There's another company that has it out now.
Do they?
Yeah.
Okay, because that's interesting, because I'm not even making this up. I actually searched for it on Amazon today because I wanted another one. And full disclosure, they actually sent me that. It's by Rav Power. They sent me to try it. Yeah. And I looked at it and I was like, this looks like something I'd really use. So I was like, bring it on. And then I really liked it. And then it disappeared off Amazon. And I reached out to them and I didn't hear back from them. And
I don't know if they're – maybe they're private branding or something like that. Yeah. But I just picked one up and we took it camping this weekend. And it was awesome.
Yeah. And it runs – the light will run forever, which you know, I rave about all the time. But it's like if you're going to carry a battery pack – why not have it be a lantern, too? Yeah, I love that thing.
Yeah.
Do you ever loan any of your gear to your friends to help with your reviews or even just trying to pique their interest in hammocking and backpacking in general?
Yeah, not specifically for actual – at least not yet. I haven't specifically lent gear to my friends to say, hey, test this so I can work it into a review. But I can see that now that I've kind of converted more, if not all, of my friends to hammock camping. If I do get gear in the future, I could see myself doing that. But we definitely all share gear pretty extensively. I know TJ's got my I think I gave him my 0 degree underquilt for a trip he's doing up to Pennsylvania. And I've got Mike's tent right now that I'm taking out to Arizona because I don't own a tent big enough for my wife and I. So we all definitely share gear.
Mm-hmm.
Saves a little money that way, too.
It really does.
Everybody's got their little, their niche stuff.
When you're doing your videos and when you're like out in the field or whatever,
yeah,
you like I like how you mentioned that you use we instead of I, right? The way that you engage the viewer, you occur to me at least as somebody who wants to teach or to share.
It definitely, yeah, I do enjoy that aspect of it.
Yeah,
yeah.
Do you think? Better way to say this. If there was one thing that you could teach everybody that you talk to, like that asks you about hiking, or if there's one thing that you could teach everybody, what would it be?
Cross-reference and don't just hop on YouTube and listen to the first guy that you hear, myself included, for sure. I would say
there must be a story there.
Just in general, I think it's good to go out in multiple source. That's why I probably started using YouTube as a viewer in the first place.
Okay.
It's just so awesome to go out there and get a bunch of different opinions. Mm-hmm. And then you can kind of aggregate those, boil them down, and average them out and come up with something that works for you. So I'd say, you know, unless you're really adverse to it and it bores you, you know, do your research, get a couple different opinions, ask a few of your friends, not just one,
mm-hmm.
you know, because you might have a friend who camps and he might do stuff a certain way. I'm not saying he's wrong, but I mean, like, why ask just him?
Right.
So go out there, ask a few friends, or get on the internet, go on the forums, hammock forums. I mean, I'm sure you would agree that there's a lot of different ways to skin a cat out there.
There are. Yeah, absolutely. There's so many people who are so generous with their time mm-hmm. as well.
Yeah. 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 Especially some of those posts out there and those videos, people sharing information
mm-hmm.
and people sharing information with me. Both on my website and on the comment section.
Well, now we come to the point. Always, you know, trying to do something off topic. Oh, it's still with hammock camping and all, though. Top quilt versus sleeping bag. You see on a lot of, on the hammock boards and all, most people do have the top quilt. So a lot of people also, you know, just zip their sleeping bag open some. Mm-hmm. Or even convert a sleeping bag into a top quilt. What are your ideas on that?
My ideas are, I think a lot of people, and this might be going away as hammock camping gets more popular, but it seems like a lot of people start out with tent camping because it's just so more traditional.
Mm-hmm.
And I did the same thing. And I tell most of my friends when I convert them, don't worry about the top quilt right now. You already got a sleeping bag. There's so many other things that you can work on doing. So I'm all for, even though it's not weight efficient, I'm all for dual purposing sleeping bags as top quilts.
Yeah.
That being said, I don't think I'm ever buying a sleeping bag again.
Hmm.
And I do still tent camp. But I used my top quilt on the ground, and I have no problem with it.
So you have like an extra wide top quilt or something?
I started out, my first one was a Hammock Gear 40. I picked that up with the intention of it just being for the hammock. Worked great. And then we went on a trip, similar situation where everybody wanted to do tent. So I hopped in on that trip with them and brought a sleeping pad, but I didn't want to – I wanted to save some weight.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of into that. So I just brought my standard width hammock gear, 40 model, and it went down to mid-30s, and it was fine, and it worked. I did notice I had to be a little cognizant of rolling over,
yeah,
you know?
Yep.
So I had to be kind of aware of that. But my next top quilt from – my wife got one. She got a 20 degree, and I got a 0 degree eventually. And I get them all in wide now.
Okay.
I wouldn't say people have to do that if they're only hammock camping, but I do end up in a tent sometimes, and I find that a wide top quilt on a sleeping pad is perfectly fine. Don't worry about not having a hood, you know, like the mummy bag hood.
Yep.
I just get a light micro fleece type hat if it's that kind of weather, and my head's just as warm as a sleeping bag. So
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's my thoughts on that. I love the top quilts.
Mark, what do you think?
I think top quilt. I'm still new to this, and I'm still in a sleeping bag actually, and I haven't even gotten a underquilt yet. And you know, it's definitely on my list of top of the list of things to get.
Yeah.
This weekend, what? Let's see. Saturday night, it got, or Sunday morning, it got to 23, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in my pad and in my sleeping bag. And you know what? I was actually toasty warm when I woke up. But it still doesn't change that. You know what? I definitely feel a little constricted within it. And I definitely would like to be purchasing a top quilt sometime soon. Although that will not be before I do get a decent underquilt. Or I make my own underquilt. I'm still working on that.
I was going to say, so you're using a pad right now?
Yeah, yeah.
Do you
And I've been doing an inflatable pad, okay. And it's actually a little bit wider, so it works. It does come up like on my shoulders a little bit.
Oh, good.
I didn't have any cold spots, and this time because it's the coldest I've gone with it, I did have a relatively thin wool blanket that I just laid on top of the pad. I was dry and I was warm when I woke up this morning, so.
Cool.
Or yesterday morning, actually.
Do you think, just curious, will you go with, assuming that you're not going to jump in and buy top and bottom quilt at the same time, maybe you will, but what would you get first? Are you leaning towards bottom quilt
first? Definitely on the bottom quilt first, and then continue using the top quilt, you know, or using the sleeping bag as a top quilt.
Yeah.
But it's the son that wants to go to private school and the car payments that hold off on things like that.
Yeah. That'll do it.
Yeah, I'm still torn. I thrash around a lot when I sleep.
Okay.
I got the Jimmy legs. You know, the what do you call it? Restless legs.
Ooh.
And so I actually made myself like probably a 40, 50 degree top quilt. I harvested down from a bunch of
like pillows or something.
Actually jackets. My wife found them at like, you know, those white elephant sales that the church is doing stuff.
Yeah.
And so I found two or three jackets. Well, sorry, let me correct that. My wife generously donated a couple of, down jackets. And I harvested the down from that. So I built it and I find even at that temperature, I find I'll turn over or I'll move around a lot and I'm still tucking it behind me.
Yeah.
And it's a full, it's a full width. The other thing is, especially when it's cold, I'm a snorkeler.
Okay.
So I really like the hood on the sleeping bag.
You do. Okay. All right. Okay.
So even though if somebody could solve the problem of how to put a hood on a top quilt so you could snorkel, I'd probably be happy with that, but at this point, I'm still sleeping bag and top and bottom quilting together.
Okay. Well, that answers my other question then, because I was going to say, when I use a sleeping bag as a top quilt, I'll actually invert it upside down, leave it unzipped, so I have my foot box and then like a blanket over me. But if you like the mummy hood, I'm guessing you don't do that, because that would probably be kind of hard.
It's awkward, unfortunately.
To cover your entire
face. Unfortunately, it is. But, I think the other part is obviously Mark's concern too. There is a cost.
Oh God, yeah.
To moving from a sleeping bag to a top quilt, and I still anticipate that I'll be using sleeping bags. I mean, last summer, was it? No, last fall, the scouts went and did the 1812, War of 1812 reenactment.
Mm-hmm.
And that's done in Fort Niagara. It's Fort Niagara, right? Or is it Fort George?
Yes.
Yeah, Fort George, Ontario.
I was getting confused between Fort Niagara and Fort Erie.
Yeah. No, it's Fort George, Ontario, which is right over the border. Yep. So this reenactment is done, and everybody's laid out in a grid on a giant parade field.
Okay.
No trees.
Yeah.
So even in the Northeast, sometimes you can run into spots where you might not have a tree, and you might not know you're not going to have a tree until you get there.
Yeah,
so that's knowing, true. Knowing that I can, you know, have a sleeping bag, I'll usually throw a pad in the car if I'm going to be doing that.
Yeah. Yeah, and if you're using a pad and a hammock, you always know that if you have a suspension failure or something,
yep.
You got yourself a tarp, you got a sleeping pad, you know, you can get through the night without
suffering
it being too terrible. Yeah. So that's one thing I do think of with the underquilts. If I need to go to ground, it's going to be pretty cold, you know?
Yeah, it is. You're going to be gathering leaves and sticks and
yeah
stuff like that. All right. Well, that's the conversation. Syntax 77, again. We are, as usual, really grateful that you took the time to come and sit with us and do a quick interview. It's a lot of fun
to have a
conversation and kind of get your point of view about what you're doing and why you're doing it.
No, I appreciate it. I definitely enjoyed it. And I've listened to all your podcasts so far.
Oh, wow. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm digging it. I'm liking what you're doing.
Hey, Mark, we have 7 listeners now.
There you go. I'll get my wife to listen, and we'll get you up to, you know, we'll get another one.
Great. Great.
So, Mark, we talk a lot about warm sleeper and cold sleeper. I don't think we've ever really talked about what that means for our listeners.
No, we haven't really touched on it, and I think we've got good examples right here.
Yeah.
Which we've seen in the past. And just how, what they're comfortable in.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a little bit warmer, where the cold doesn't, you know, sleeping wise, it doesn't affect me as much and all.
Yeah.
And I can handle a little less where, you know, if something says a 20 degree bag, I could probably push it down into the single digits and still be comfortable without having to layer up a lot more than what I usually would do and all.
Yeah, it's interesting you put a numeric value on it, because I think that's probably something that people should get to know about themselves especially before they start hammock camping or before they start cold weather hammock camping, understanding whether they're a cold sleeper or a warm sleeper. I'm the same way. If I get a bag rated at 30 degrees, I'm not sure I can push that thing past 40 getting cold.
Right.
And the same bag, you'd be able to go down to, say, 10 degrees below its regular rating.
Oh, yeah. And it goes, you know, that happens with my son, too, where we're always bugging him, you know, put another jacket on, you're getting cold. He's like, no, I'm comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And then same thing, you know, camping-wise and stuff, sometimes I'm bugging him, you know, put something on, you're getting cold. No, I'm comfortable. And actually, a couple nights ago, I remember he was sitting on the couch, and he got up, I sat down, and he was wearing like a t-shirt and shorts.
Mm-hmm.
The temperature outside was in the teens, I think. And we don't keep our thermostat high in the house. And the cushions were hot.
Oh, wow.
When I sat down. Okay. I mean, it was really warm. And it's just, you know, he's got a high metabolism, I guess. And the cold doesn't seem to bother him at all.
Yeah, I think it could be other stuff too. Like, I know as you get older, you lose an insulation layer of fat under your skin.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that helps in terms of maintaining your comfort. I've also heard like women tend to be colder sleepers than men for some reason. And I don't know why that is.
Yeah.
You know, maybe less density for their muscles or whatever. But usually the complaint I hear is that women sleep a little bit colder than men. So they tend to be more conservative with their bags and with their jackets and stuff like that.
Yeah. And that also brings up with the temperature ratings on the equipment and all.
Mm-hmm.
Because, and like you said, you have to know yourself, because you can't really go by, okay, it's going to be 10 degrees out, a 0 degree bag is good for me. Well, you know, it might not, you know, just what it says on paper might not be it might be good for somebody else, but it might not be good for you.
Right.
So, and that's, you know, learning how trying out other people's equipment or just learning what works for you best, because it's all about comfort. Because if you don't, you know, if you have a miserable time, it only takes a couple times where people would be like, you know, that's probably the biggest reason why people try it and then just give up.
They have a bad time, bad experience. Yeah.
And it may not be just a bad experience, just be, you know, inexperience, really.
Yeah, I read a lot of, not reviews, but I read a lot of posts, like on Facebook and some of the hammock-related Facebook forums or groups and on the forums, where people are asking, you know, whether what they have will work for whatever trip they're doing. You see it a lot, right, at this time of the year especially. And I keep holding back because I know somebody else is going to say it, and it's like, whatever you think you're going to try, go to your backyard and try it there first.
Yeah.
You know, find a way you can do it so that you can bail if you're shivering at 3 a.m. Right. And then you learn from that and you can learn to adjust. If you learn you're a cold sleeper, you can manage for that and have a great experience.
Right, right.
You know, and if you're a hot sleeper, well, all the better. That means you don't have to pay as much money or bring as much gear, and you can still have a good time and stay just as warm at night.
Right.
But that whole idea, I think, of testing stuff in a safe place before you are out in the middle of the woods where it's really difficult to bail. Now, I don't think anybody really wants to do a 5-mile night hike because they're, you know, they're not able to sleep.
Yeah, yeah. It'd be a miserable time.
Yeah,
absolutely. Especially if you're with a group and you're not the driver and everybody else is nice and warm and comfortable.
Yeah.
And you're shivering and you really don't have an escape. So.
Right. You're just going to be the one suffering until the morning when you can say something to somebody else and somebody will be like, hey, grab my jacket, or you can use my gear overnight, or, you know, until whatever that trip is done.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it all comes down. And even I don't have trees in my backyard. Mm-hmm. I don't have a stand. I haven't built anything yet to be able to test my stuff out. But, you know, this weekend when we go, we're planning on camping out. Our Boy Scout troop is going.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's basically car camping. Most of them are staying in the cabin. The older boys are staying outside under a tarp. Some of us in hammocks.
Yeah.
And something like that, okay, that's when I usually have to test my equipment. But because we have, you know, the cabin's right there and everything, there's one bale.
Mm-hmm.
Or even I'm just bringing some extra gear. I've got, for an emergency, I keep a wool blanket in my car. So that'll be right there. So I could always just throw that underneath me.
Yeah.
Or something like that. It's, you know, being prepared, you know, be prepared for the worst and hope for the best.
Yep. Yep. So. Absolutely. Yeah, I'm expecting to do the same thing. I'll be probably bring some extra gear. Do, you know, if I can, I can do an experiment. It's not a big deal to get up in the middle of the night and get more stuff.
Yeah, and it's not supposed to be that bad this weekend. Right. So only in the 20s, I think. So
that's not bad. At least it's not 20 below.
Yep. Yep. That's a big difference.
Yeah.
So.
So, Mark, yes. Our special guest next month is actually going to be a little bit of a different direction for us than we normally do.
Yeah, yeah, it's really interesting, especially for the DIYers. We've got, in the past, we did Dutch, mm-hmm. who had all his Dutch bling, and now we're going for another big part of the DIY. And you want to let us know who it's going to be?
Sure. We're going to have the opportunity to have a conversation with Kyle, who is the owner and operator of Ripstop by the Roll. They're probably the best place to get ripstop and a lot of the nylons and other materials that we use for doing DIY hammocks, hammock gear, even backpacking and related equipment. So if you're interested or thinking about doing DIY or want to learn a little bit more about the materials that you might use if you decide to DIY your own gear, this is going to be the interview that you're going to want to listen to.
As always, you can find us at www.hyohpodcast.com or on our Facebook page at hyohpodcast. If you like what you hear, please give us a positive review on iTunes.
Absolutely. If you want to comment or have a question, please visit our Facebook page, or you can send me an email at jonathan@hyohpodcast.com.
And me at mark@hyohpodcast.com. Also, thanks to the following individuals that suggested this podcast topic: Jonathan's son, Christopher, Oot and a Boot, and JMB Devotee.
And of course, special thanks to Skid Von Ark for allowing us to use his music for our intro and our outro, and for ITX for hosting this podcast and designing our logo. Thanks everyone for hanging around. On the ground, yeah, the tent in my pack slowly weighed some pounds. I opened my eyes, and what did I see? A man from Minnesota swinging tree to tree. A thin piece of fabric suspended in the air. Should I even try it?
Man, should you even dare?
Had two straps and a couple of toggles. How this would even work, my mind began to boggle. Yeah.